Just because the action on the gridiron has officially come to a close and the hoopla surrounding all of the madness that took place over the NBA trade deadline is complete, doesn't mean that you don't have anywhere to turn, as we stand only just a few days away from the All-Star festivities set to get underway in downtown San Francisco, a place where the league's top stars, from rising ones to established, will all convene to take part in not only the events on Friday and Saturday night, but the association's premier gala, where the top 24 players of the day will all take to the hardwood on Sunday night to hoop in the ultimate exhibition we know as the All-Star Game. What's up, everyone, and welcome inside to yet another edition of the New 24 podcast. This marks episode 14 for those listening in and all of the good people who have been keeping score of things on the board dating back to the onset of the show's inception. We cannot thank you enough for taking out the time to tap in and make sure you're up to speed on everything around the NBA. I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins, and I'm joined, as always, beside my partner and co-host of the show, Torin Stagger. We were busy this past week as news came our way left and right, but we made it through victoriously with the launch of Second Chance Points, as well as ensuring that we also got episode 13 of the pod out to all who were in need of their hoops fixed. How you holding up, man?
Oh man, we doing greater than holding up, man. Doing excellent.
That's amazing to hear. That's what I love to hear. On the previous episode of the New 24 podcast, me and Torrance took some time to discuss the three-team deal between the Sacramento Kings, San Antonio Spurs, and Chicago Bulls that sent out All-Star guard De'Aaron Fox to the Alamo City and Zach LaVine to the Kings in a seven-player, seven-pick exchange between the franchises, in addition to assessing the overall fit of Fox and LaVine within their new destinations before having an in-depth conversation on whether or not Bulls faith to have trust in Arturas Karnauskas and Mark Eversley to lead a potential rebuild in the Windy City, prior to talking about whether playing on winning teams should be enough to garner official selection for a reserve spot in the All-Star game following the recent omission of Charlotte Hornets guard LaMelo Ball. Now, we'll seek to discuss the recent debuts of Anthony Davis and Luka Doncic and their new destinations following the deal that shook up execs around the league, while also discussing another trade that got nixed in the latter part of the weekend and what fans can look forward to seeing in this year's upcoming All-Star weekend. But before we get into the main topics at hand, let's take time to open up the show as we always do here on the New 24 podcast by saluting the game's best in our opening tip-off segment, beginning with a rookie forward that you'll see participate in the slam dunk contest on All-Star Saturday night, Matas Buzelis for the Chicago Bulls, whose career high 24 points on a perfect 10 for 10 shooting night from the floor and a 133 to 124 home win against the Miami Heat, made the 20-year-old forward just the sixth rookie in NBA history to shoot 100% on 10 or more shot attempts from the floor in a single outing, in addition to the first rookie in NBA history to do so with a single three-point attempt. As the G League Ignite alum also shot a perfect 4-for-4 beyond the arc in 31 minutes of playing time, as well as Trae Young of the Atlanta Hawks, who earned Eastern Conference Player of the Week honors for his performance in Week 16, as the Oklahoma product averaged 31.3 points and 10.5 assists per contest and route the guy in Atlanta to a 3-1 record, in addition to his fourth NBA All-Star nod along the way, as Young was named by league commissioner Adam Silver as the replacement player for injured Milwaukee Bucks forward Giannis Antetokounmpo, who will be unable to participate in this year's contest due to nursing a left calf strain. And last but not least, the Hall of Fame coach who spent 35 years as a national television and radio analyst, covering 18 NBA finals, all the while roaming the sidelines for 15 years as a head coach in both the ABA and NBA, and Hubie Brown, the 91-year-old broadcaster and teacher whose first NBA coaching job was as an assistant with the Bucks back in the 70s, called the final game of his career beside Mike Breen in the city where it all began, and was awarded the game ball following the sound of the final horn to send the legend off into retirement during the Bucks' recent showdown against the Philadelphia 76ers last weekend in Milwaukee. Torrance, we've had the pleasure of seeing a bevy of grand performances over the past several days since we last recorded, such as Thunder guard and MVP candidate Shai Gilgeous-Alexander lighting up the Phoenix Suns for 50 points and route to an 18 for 29 shooting night from the floor, not to mention a rejuvenated Stephen Curry, who recently became just the fourth player in league history to ever score 30 points or more in four straight games at 36 years of age or older, after pouring in a 38-point outing for the Dubs in a win against Milwaukee at the top of the week. When you take time to reflect back on the week that was, what are some of the top storylines, performances from players or teams in the league that managed to stand out to you as we get set to enter the All-Star break?
All right, let me start with Damian Lillard coming off of that loss against the Golden State Warriors. He had 38 points in that game. Game previous to that, he had 43 against Tyrese Maxey and the Philadelphia 76ers. Then he had a double-double against the Atlanta Hawks. So he had three games, played great against three of the top guards in the NBA. And he had previous games against Charlotte and Memphis too, but no LaMelo, no Ja. So whoever created this schedule, shout out to them, man, because if everybody was healthy, this would have been a great week to evaluate Damian Lillard against the top guards in the league. He's doing a great job, you know, holding the fort down for the Milwaukee Bucks while Giannis is out with an injury. Last year, kind of struggled. This year, he's starting to look like the Damian Lillard that we've always known. And secondly, the Denver Nuggets right now got the longest win streak in the league, seven games, only a game back of the second seed in the West. You know, Denver was off to a slow start, a lot of injuries, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of young guys struggling. But right now, going into the All-Star break, starting to look like things are starting to work out. Julian Strother's playing great. Christian Braun's having an incredible season, especially statistically. If you look at his field goal percentage, crazy. Right now, Russ, Peyton Watson, they're out. But Jokic, I know that we just said Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is our MVP. But Jokic, he's starting to make a strong case again, man. I can't even lie. Like, at least on my end. I still think Shai is his award to lose. I mean, Jokic gets them to that second seed. I can definitely see it being a strong argument going in his favor. And another guy on the team, Michael Porter Jr., he's been playing great as of late. Jamal Murray starting around into form. I know we got OKC as the one seed. The Lakers just got Luka. Golden State just got Jimmy. The Rockets are playing great. Memphis has been having a good season. But the Denver Nuggets, they're starting to look like they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the Western Conference playoffs once again. And lastly, just shout out to Hubie Brown, man.
Yeah, most definitely shout out to Hubie Brown, legend, true pioneer of the game, a guy that got it done, really helped basketball in Memphis get solidified with what he did with the Grizzlies, leading them to their first playoff appearance following their move from Vancouver back in the early 2000s with Jason Williams and young Paul Gasol, Shane Battier and the like. True legend, a guy that will definitely be missed and was excellent when it came to connecting the old generation and regime within basketball with the new generation and regime in basketball in so many ways.
Yeah, man, that Memphis run, that was cool to see. That was the first time, at least when I started watching basketball, see somebody go from the sidelines to coaching. And that last point that you made about the young and the old, Hubie Brown, I never remember hearing Hubie hate on the game. Never once. And I think that's like one of the coolest things looking back at it now. I never once heard him hate on the game and how it was playing. He always had the same love for the game. You never heard him show any malice to the young players, anything.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you absolutely. He was definitely a guy that connected with all generations. And I seen it firsthand, you know, when he was calling games here in Chicago, where we're recording from, you know, players left and right from the Bulls or the opposing club that they were playing on given nights when the Bulls were on national television, always stopped by show Hubie Love, always a guy that was willing to talk with fans, coaches, players alike about the game, was a true ambassador for the game. And it's going to be real sad to see him go, but wish him nothing but the best in retirement. And you talk about the Denver Nuggets, Nikola Jokic being a guy that in consideration for the Most Valuable Player Award. It's hard not to consider when he's averaging a triple-double line like he is, averaging almost 30 points a game to go alongside of 12 rebounds a game, 10 assists a night. How many centers can you point to and say You know, each season they're among the top five, if not among the league leaders in assists per game. The guy's getting it done. And that game that they have against Oklahoma City is going to be must-see TV. And I think it's going to be a matchup that has major implications on who wins the award. Although Shai Gilgeous-Alexander continues to get the job done with what he's doing in OKC, putting up 50 in three out of his last six outings. Last time I checked, been a hell of a season, and I think we're getting a great MVP race, and I hope fans across the country and beyond, as well as the globe, really appreciate what they're seeing. For me, the things that stood out to me, I have a couple. I know a couple weeks ago when we were closing out the midseason awards combo that I said Jalen Wells of the Memphis Grizzlies was my pick to win Rookie of the Year back in episode 12. However, the rookie guard Stephon Castle of the San Antonio Spurs is starting to put it all together, and he's building off of but already was a very impressive month of January for the UConn standout. The reigning Western Conference Rookie of the Month. He's poured in at least 20 points or more in four out of San Antonio's last eight games. And he most recently went off for a career-high 33 points off of the bench on a 10-for-15 night from the floor in an outing against LaMelo Ball and the Charlotte Hornets that came down to the wire. Spurs fell short late in that contest, but Castle managed to stand out to me. Really provided San Antonio with a major boost offensively. Did a solid job of getting downhill, making some plays off the ball, and taking advantage of the spacing by attacking the rim and getting to the charity stripe throughout that evening. Castle even made the Hornets pay several times for leaving them open on the perimeter, particularly in catch-and-shoot situations. He shot it with confidence. And this is something coming into the league that Castle wasn't really known for, but you can tell that he's worked at it, and the numbers show it. Castle shot 40% from three-point land over the last 10 outings for the Spurs, and he's managed to hit at least two trays or more in four out of his last six outings as he's shooting nearly 53% from the floor as well as 45% from long range in the month of February as of this recording. He's leading all rookies in total scoring, and he's one of only six rookies this season to score at least 30 points or more in a game this year. You'll be able to see him this upcoming weekend in the Rise of Stars game as part of the NBA All-Star schedule. And should he continue to perform at the level that he has, he very well could have the Rookie of the Year award sitting on his mantle come season's end, as he's really making strides by the game. I know that's a guy that you spoke highly of, Torrence, and a guy that we talked about was a must-keep asset for the Spurs when the rumors were floating around that De'Aaron Fox wanted to go there. He managed to get De'Aaron Fox without having to give up Stephon Castle. You understand why R.C. Buford in that Spurs front office didn't want to give him up with the promise that he showed and exhibited as of late. And Zion Williamson of the New Orleans Pelicans. I understand that this is a polarizing player who just happened to play in the 200th game of his NBA career in his fifth season with New Orleans. However, when he's in the lineup, he continues to play at a high level, even in spite of the minutes restrictions and not being cleared by the Pelicans front office to play him back-to-backs since returning from a 27-game absence last month due to hamstring issues. Closed out last week with a 40-point outing on 16-for-21 shooting from the floor in just 28 minutes of floor time against the Kings. Became the first player in Pelicans history to ever record 40 points or more in 28 minutes or less, and just the 11th player in the history of the league to ever do it. Really showcased why he's New Orleans' premier primary weapon on the offensive end of the floor. Sacramento had difficulty keeping him from getting to the rim without fouling him. Kings had Jonas Valanciunas on him, and it was nothing that he could do against his former teammate when isolated in space defensively in a one-on-one game where Zion just punished him on drives to the rack constantly throughout the evening. It couldn't even stop him from getting to his left hand. And he's managing to get to his spots with so much ease to where he doesn't even have to take the three-point shot anymore. You hear people time and time again state that Zion's a bust. Zion's not trustworthy due to his injury history. One of those statements may be true. But for those who are quick to state that he's a bust, I don't know how you consider him to be such a thing, especially the members of the analytical crowd, even if his best ability isn't his availability at this point in his career. Because when he has been available, he's done nothing but produce, albeit in a very limited sample size. You got a lot of fanalists out there who always love to say how they want to see old school basketball where players attack the rim, don't shoot a ton of threes. If you're one of those type of fans, then Zion Williamson's your guy. I really hope that we could get a few seasons out of him where he's fully healthy and we can see the night-to-night exploits from him. Because outside of Giannis Antetokounmpo, I don't think you're going to find a player is more efficient in the restricted area or just on the floor as a whole than Zion Williamson.
Nah, Zion, we've spoken about before. Like, this is a former all-star, one of the more dominant players in the league, highly talented. I don't know if it's just a situation that he's not fond of, or if it's really the injuries, or if the organization is just really playing it that safe. I don't know, but anytime he's playing, I definitely recommend checking it out.
Let's move away from all of the opening customary things on the docket to talk about the debut of a 10-time NBA All-Star out in the 214 that lived up to the hype and some, despite coming to a sudden ending before the party really could begin. Anthony Davis, the headliner of the Dallas Mavericks, returned from the controversial trade that also involved Luka Doncic being shipped to the Los Angeles Lakers, became the third player ever in the history of the franchise to record 20-plus points to go beside 10-plus rebounds and 5-plus assists and a half against the Houston Rockets this past weekend. Yet it would also come crashing down in spite of earning a win against their interstate rival as Davis exited the contest late in the third quarter after suffering a non-contact injury on defense, which was later revealed to be a left adductor strain that is expected to keep him out for multiple weeks, according to reports. Davis, who will be replaced in this year's All-Star game by his teammate Kyrie Irving, recorded a team-high 26 points and 16 rebounds with 7 assists and 3 blocks in 31 minutes of floor time. I don't know about you, Torrance. I don't know if you got a chance to really catch this game, but it felt like a playoff game watching it in live time. The energy in the arena at the American Airlines Center was something to behold. You could tell that it was a lot of tension, even though I didn't get a chance to see some of the footage until the game was going on midway through, where you had fans protesting, firing Nico Harrison and whatnot. Although Anthony Davis's debut ended prematurely due to injury, what did you make of the Mavs' debut based on what you may have seen, considering all of the hoopla that surrounded it taking place in Dallas?
Two things can be true. Trading Luka Doncic is a bad idea, but trading Anthony Davis is a great idea. Trading for Anthony Davis, I should say, is a great idea. What he brings defensively and as a starting power forward, the advantages on both sides of the ball. He led the team in assists that last game because now he's back to being a complete mismatch at the four now with another big in there. And as you can see, anytime he got a chance, he threw lobs up. That was his spot. Now he's helping create for others, which something that the Lakers tried, but it didn't really work out. And he showed the way he can really help our offense. It reminded me of his time in New Orleans playing with DeMarcus Cousins. And Daniel Gafford is definitely not DeMarcus Cousins, but he can finish around the rim. I mean, everybody said it. The Dallas Mavericks and the fans got the full Anthony Davis experience. You saw greatness, and you saw the injury.
I was impressed with what I saw. When you look at the two-man game that AD and Daniel Gafford had, it was clicking right away. First 15 seconds of the game, he got the ball on the block. He looked over his shoulder, hit Daniel Gafford for an alley-oop. He had the turnaround jumper going. For a guy that didn't get much practice time with that team, I couldn't tell. Because when I saw the pick and roll tandem between him and Kyrie, how he was able to make things happen out of pick and pop sets, he showcased all the things that you want to see from him. You could tell he took this game very personal as a message and a reminder to let not only the rest of the country know, but the city of Dallas know that I'm that dude. I still am capable of getting 20 and 10 against the best of them. And I can also do it as a number one option, which is what he was, because they played exclusively through him for the majority of the time that he was on the floor. And you could tell he took the matchup against Alperen Sengun to heart, because Alperen Sengun, who was one of my favorite young bigs in the league, he wasn't a match much for Davis. You know, I remember it was a play. Sengun was trying to post him up on the block. AD swatted it, outlet pass to PJ Washington for a dunk. It set the tone off right. It sucked when he got hurt, because I'm looking at it, I'm like, you got AD with Daniel Gafford. Imagine when Derek Lively get back into the fold. With this big of a front court, how you going to match up with them? I was really impressed with what I saw. And I wanted to see them continue to keep building off of that. In addition to the injury to Davis, we also saw Mavs forward P.J. Washington sit out the entire second half of the win due to a sprained right ankle he suffered in that contest. I also witnessed center Daniel Gafford go down with a knee injury for Dallas in the early moments of their most recent outing against the Kings that ended in a tough overtime loss, as the Arkansas standout was unable to put any weight on it and needed help getting off the floor. This is a team that's already down at the five position with Derek Lively, the second out due to a stress fracture in his right ankle. Dwight Powell has a right hip strain. AD, as we know, has a left adductor strain. We know that if healthy, Dallas is a team that could bolster one of the best defenses in basketball. It could potentially make things very, very intriguing in the West come playoff time. Do you believe if they could get some pieces back intact within the next 4 weeks or so, in a month, that they will have enough time to gel and go on a run akin to what we saw a season ago?
Oh, no, that's to me, that's out the question. That's out the question right now. San Antonio, I believe they are the 12th seed in the West, and they only 3.5 games back of the Dallas Mavericks right now. Phoenix Suns are an 11th, and they're only one game back. And you just lost your best player. You traded Luka, who already missed the previous 25 games, who's your best player. You trade for somebody else who's your new best player, and now he's going to be out for the foreseeable future. Because he was hurt when you traded for him. They were already 12-18, and they lost 30 games. Now, a support piece like P.J. Washington is down. So now there's even more pressure on Kyrie, on Klay Thompson, to carry this team offensively. Right now, I wouldn't consider either guy in their offensive primes right now. Now, maybe somebody like Max Christie, he can step up in the meantime. As far as the success they had last year, that's getting to the NBA Finals. And anything in that Western Conference right now is possible, but I bet against it, because right now, if you told me to put some money on them missing the playoffs, I might put that money down. Because of the health. I mean, you got teams like Jimmy can provide the Golden State Warriors a short-term boost. I do believe that. I do believe that he can boost them into that play-in and they can become a tough out. I'm not going to bet against Kevin Durant in a one-game series. Who else we got down there? We got Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves, the Kings, the Clippers. Yeah, that's gonna be a lot. That's gonna be a lot to overcome. And we're talking about a month without Anthony Davis.
Yeah, I don't think they could go on a run like we saw a season ago at this moment in time, which is being the NBA Finals. But I think if they could stay within that 7-8 range of the play-in consistently, while AD is still nursing an injury, that's a positive sign. And if they can take what they can with the limited time that they'll have with AD in the fold and try to build off of that and possibly sneak into the top six, you could go in with a little bit of momentum. But it's not guaranteed. And I think that this is a very unfortunate time to have that type of injury, knowing that you wanted to get AD ingrained into the system. And with the debut that he had, it looked like they could go on a run and, like, probably win maybe 15 out their next 20 with the way that they was looking, because you could tell the team was amped up and ready to go. And you bring up Max Christie, right? Max Christie, since getting traded over to Dallas, has put up 15 points or more every contest. He's shooting at least 50% or better in most of these contests, and he's making a positive contribution, knocking down at least 3 triples or more in every single out, with the exception of one.
I thought he was definitely one of the key parts to that deal. And that's somebody whose development me and you talked about over the past few seasons with L.A., and you started to see him blossom this season under J.J. Redick. But see, the thing with Anthony Davis and getting hurt, we've seen this movie so many times. And not just exclusively with AD. We've seen guys go to a new team at the tail end of their prime, tail end of their years. They always have a great start, and then this injury happens. And then they come back for a few games, and then an injury happens. And then the team struggles. I hope that things turn around in a positive direction for the Dallas Mavericks and for Anthony Davis. But, I mean, he's had parts of his career where he may have dealt with injuries for multiple seasons in a row. It's not just a one-season thing with him sometimes. Like, it can be a thing that's just going on year after year after year. And he's not getting any younger. Kyrie Irving's not getting any younger. Klay Thompson's not getting any younger. So all of a sudden, you got kind of an older roster at the top now. So it's a lot. It's a lot to be considered long term with this.
Do you think he rushed in coming back? I mean, because he was dealing with the ab strain, as we know. His last game as a LA Laker, he got hurt in Philadelphia when the Lakers were on their Grammys road trip, sent them back to Los Angeles, which was around the time that trade ended up going down. So do you think he came back too soon? And do you think part of that was a byproduct of seeing the fan reaction? Because I've noticed lately that AD is really trying his best to ingratiate himself with the city of Dallas. In a way akin to LA, but this feels a lot different because you got a Mavericks fan base that is really, really ticked off with Nico Harrison, as well as the Mavericks ownership group and the Dumont family.
Anthony Davis, I can't speak for the man, but I could put my conspiracy hat on. Hey, man, AD was never finishing that game, and AD wasn't going to play until after the All-Star break probably anyway. He was already out with the Lakers. He was already out, and I don't remember too much conversation on his imminent return at that point. Yeah, I mean, he hurt. He out, but I don't really just put too much. I just can't put too much on that. Now, as far as him ingratiating himself with Dallas, I mean, I feel like a part of that trade was personal for him. I'm sure he gets it from a basketball standpoint, a business standpoint, a lot of standpoints, but it's still personal. And right now, you got a wounded fan base. They need somebody to let them know that things are going to be all right. It's good words from AD. I'm sure it means a lot, but Luka not coming back, and he not going to be able to fix that pain. So the only thing he can do is get healthy and produce on the basketball court. Anything short of that is not going to make these people feel better. I think they're going to treat him with the utmost respect. You know, now if the injuries continue, fans will start to get frustrated, and it won't be his fault directly. It'll be Nico Harrison, but he's a physical representation on the basketball court of Nico Harrison at this point. Your name is attached to him because of the trade.
Segwaying away from the official debut of AD down in Dallas to discuss the Lakers' debut of Luka Doncic, while all of Los Angeles' finest out to watch the five-time All-Star make his return to the hardwood after a 25-game absence due to being sidelined with a calf strain. As we witness LeBron James prop up his new running mate, allowing Doncic to be introduced last in the Lakers' starting lineup introductions at home against the Utah Jazz, followed by Doncic connecting with Jackson Hayes on an alley-oop less than a minute into the outing. The 25-year-old finished with 14 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists, 24 minutes of action as the Lakers took care of business, winning their 6th straight contest in double-digit fashion against Utah to open up the week. We didn't see the gaudy numbers, stat lines we typically see from the 5-time All-NBA first-team selection like we've become accustomed to in his debut. However, we did see flashes as to what can potentially make the pairing between the Don and the King on the watch, as we saw Doncic snatch a rebound and after a bounce, throw a court-length dime to Bron en route to a bucket in transition, something we usually see Bron doing for others more than him being on the receiving end of those. What are your initial takeaways from Luka's Laker debut?
I don't know, man. Just briefly. I just got my conspiracy brain just going. Because, like, now I remember them talking about the trade and how this was, like, 3-4 weeks in the making. So maybe they had AD and Luka, like, just sitting down, maybe. And maybe these guys just got to get themselves back in the game shape. Maybe that explains AD's injury. Maybe that explains Luka's minutes and, you know, his conditioning. As far as initial takeaways, it's less to do with Luka and look at Bron and how happy he is about all of this. I mean, Bron was out there like he had something to prove to Luka. Like, I thought that was funny. And Bron, like we spoke on before, y'all keep thinking that Luka gonna come over there and be his number one option, and this his team. And hey, he under LeBron James leadership over there. LeBron said, "Yeah, man, you get to come out last this game. Next game, that shit going back to regularly scheduled programming." Like, you see, it's little subtle shit like that that let y'all know, man, he not taking no step backs. If you seen the pregame in the huddle, telling Luka, "Hey, man, fit out." You know, giving him directions like, "Yeah, do your shit." When it was Kevin Love, he told him, "Stop trying to fit out. You a role player. Know your role." But at the end of the day, it's LeBron James who's going to be directing traffic on that basketball court. As far as Luka, I mean, you saw how it's going to work. He can handle the ball. AR can handle it. Bron can handle it. Bron wants to finish. Luka wants to shoot threes. Bron wants to operate from the post. Bron wants to shoot threes. Luka wants to operate from the post. So you can see how they both can fit on the basketball court together. You also saw some of the things J.J. Redick is going to do as far as staggering the minute. You saw how devastating that's going to be. The fact that you realize when LeBron James goes to sit down now, it's Luka Doncic who's going to be running the show. When Luka sits down, it's LeBron James running the show. And they got a weapon back, too, at their disposal that we'll get to speak on later. And at some point, we're going to see a 30-point triple-double from both of them, like, at the same time, one of these games. It's going to happen. The offense is going to be explosive.
Yeah, I'm really liking what I see from this Lakers offense right now. We saw Austin Reeves go off a 45-piece against the Indiana Pacers without LeBron and Luka in the fold in the game that everybody was expecting for Luka to initially make his Lakers debut. So, that was something.
Tyrese Halliburton, that's what I'm talking about right there, bro.
I know. Hey, I know.
You let that man give you 45 without Bron or Luka.
But keeping it Luka related, I think he had an okay debut. I mean, I'm not really judging it like harshly because I could tell he didn't have his legs under by the way he was shooting. However, I saw some things that impressed me, and I thought some things that shocked me in some ways because I'm not used to seeing it. I start with the thing that shocked me. Luka playing off of the ball beside LeBron James. It's not shocking, but like
I just gave you the description.
Just body language and stuff. Like I watch that type of stuff because there are some things that Luka had no choice but to do when he was in Dallas that he doesn't have to do anymore in Los Angeles. Like Luka had to be super aggressive early in games and set the tone. You don't always got to do that on this Lakers team. You know, he can pick and choose his spots a little bit more. I'm curious to see how engaged he'll continue to be off of the ball playing beside LeBron James. I know that they're going to take turns. Like you said and highlighted in your points about Luka's Laker debut, J.J. Redick has clearly made it obvious that he's going to stagger the minutes. LeBron is going to play 6 to 7 minutes where he's the lead maestro of the offense. He's going to sit, and then Luka comes in and vice versa. You're also going to see them start the first 6 minutes of the game together, and you're going to see them close probably the last 5 to 6 minutes in regulation of a game together. So I see the plan, and I like that plan because you ensure yourself, if you're J.J. Redick, that you got a playmaker on the floor at all times that can set guys up for shots. It really shouldn't be too much of a difference between the first unit and the second unit. But offensively, they're loaded. They are very loaded. I think as Luka continues to find his rhythm and find his legs, you're going to see him put up those numbers like you talked about, those 30-point triple-doubles and the like alongside of LeBron, who definitely looks like he's turned his level up another notch since Luka's been over there, man, because like ever since that Clippers game, when Luka was on the sideline, like it was like, hey, I've been on a mission. I'm gonna show you
the Knicks game.
What you gonna do?
The Knicks game when he knew the trade happened already.
You can say what you want. I know your little conspiracy brain working and shit. I get it. But I'm saying like since that Clippers game, LeBron, him and Luka, even when Luka wasn't playing, you could tell like, hey, get ready. And now that he in the fold with the way that they're playing, as hot as they are, I want to see them continue this thing going from the All-Star break into the home stretch of the season.
Yeah, first of all, the conspiracy brain, it's not a little, man. Pause. What's this? LeBron can afford to pick his spots. When Luka get his legs up under him, we need him to come out aggressive, and we need these fast starts, bro. Watching the Lakers the last few years, that was always the problem, the slow starts and always having to come back every game. Bro, you know, Luka, you didn't go to L.A. to pick your spots. You young. You supposed to be there to be aggressive, because if you don't, Bron going to take the ball again, and that's what we don't want right now. We want to see him actually, can he stay off of the ball? I'm more concerned about LeBron staying off the ball than I am Luka Doncic. Because every year LeBron starts off the ball, and he just so happens to manage to have it again, back walking the ball up and down the court. No, man. We got Luka. We got AR pushing the pace. I think Bron can still get his numbers finishing. He's a much improved three-point shooter. We know what he can do in transition. That's just my takeaway from what you was saying.
He looked like he want to play off the ball, running the floor like he was yesterday. He didn't show no signs of being a 40-year-old man at the top part of this week, I tell you that. We talk about the Lakers, who are currently in the midst of a 6-game winning streak, as we talked about, and have won 9 out of their last 10 outings. They currently sit fourth in the West standings and sit just a game and a half behind the Denver Nuggets for the third spot as of this recording under first-year head coach J.J. Redick. Head coach who, when initially hired several months ago, was met with a wide variety of skepticism among reporters and fans alike. As we approach this All-Star break, Torrance, how would you evaluate the job that J.J. Redick has done thus far?
Now, first of all, the skepticism was interesting, and we all know why. Because he was a podcaster. All of a sudden, it was like he never played basketball, never been around the game. Everybody wanted to focus on how could a guy go from a podcast studio to the sidelines of the most prominent franchise in the league. Well, that's because every episode was a job interview. You hear me and Gabriel on here, especially Gabe, you will hire him in your scouting department, your front office. Bro, know the game. And J.J. Redick displayed that. And he's been displaying it, especially these last 6 weeks, I'd say. He had an opinion about the Los Angeles Lakers before he took the job. You could hear it week to week on his show. Everybody had the criticisms, the lack of shooting, the lack of ball movement, the defense. And month by month, he's been implementing those changes as guys have gotten healthy. Now you see the benefits of having a Dorian Finney-Smith and a Jared Vanderbilt and how he's able to incorporate both of them into the offense and hide some of their weaknesses. And they can help defensively. Gabe Vincent, somebody I've been criticizing a lot, he stuck with them. And now Gabe Vincent has started to look like the guy that they signed from the Miami Heat after a finals appearance. He's doing a better job than Darvin Ham was. That's for certain. And the main thing with that, is JJ's dedicated to sticking to a 9-man rotation. Because that was the biggest issue with this team. Every night it was a different starting lineup. Every night it was a different rotation. We had lineups with three guards playing out there with Bron at the five. Just all type of chaos. And that thing's starting to make sense. There's continuity starting to be developed, even though they've made some moves. You see the system starting to benefit all the players, not just the stars. I think overall, he's done a phenomenal job this year. And with everything he said about player development, play calling, I'm looking forward to just this whole J.J. Redick, Los Angeles Lakers saga.
J.J. Redick only experience as a head coach prior to taking his Lakers job was as a youth coach for his son's fourth grade basketball team. And like you said, a lot of people that were skeptic of this hire were people that was fascinated by that. Like, how could a guy that was a podcast host and only had experience coaching a fourth grade youth basketball team go from that to head coach of the LA Lakers? And like you said, he has experience playing the game. He's a vet. He's played at the highest level, has success as a player in at the collegiate level and even at the NBA level, is a role player for over a decade plus. When you talk about how to mind the game podcast with him and LeBron James was a job interview, it was definitely a job interview. And I'll tell you why. If you actually take the time as a fan of basketball and a fan that loves the game, you could hear him outline many of the strategies alongside of LeBron before he ever got that job. He talked about in detail in one specific episode why he likes inverted pick and rolls. Now, I'm going to do something for y'all that don't know what inverted pick and rolls are. An inverted pick and roll in basketball is a play where a guard sets a screen for a big man, typically a center or a power forward, instead of the usual scenario where a big man sets a screen for a guard, essentially flipping the role in a standard pick and roll, allowing a bigger player to initiate the offense with the ball and attack mismatches created by the screen. You're probably wondering how I know that. I know that because I used to see Jeff Green and James Harden do it all the time in Houston. It was a play that was very popular in the bubble, and they made it an in vogue play that they utilized to great success in their opening round matchup against Oklahoma City. If you don't believe me, watch the film. However, I say all of that to say that was the very action that he chose to run on his first after timeout play as a head coach of the Lakers. I don't have the stats as of now, but I remember in the four after timeout plays that the Lakers ran, like through the first week and a half of the season, they came away with 6 points. That is like, I believe, 0.3 points per possession higher in after timeout plays at the time than the Lakers posted under Darvin Ham the previous season. He's cemented himself early on as one of the best play callers in ATO situations, which are after timeout plays. Like you say, Torrence, he's also developed young talent. He's given young talent playing time and thrusted them in positions that most veteran coaches would not do. You hear us talk about Doc Rivers all the time, and I know when my father listens to this episode, he's going to say, oh, y'all shitting on Doc or whatever. I don't really care. I know this to be true, and this isn't a shun on Doc, but Doc don't really trust a lot of young guys. We've seen J.J. Redick place his faith in young guys, and we watched it pay off even in times where it didn't always seem like it would initially. Just talked about Max Christie. There's no way Max Christie gets on Dallas's radar if not for what they saw him exhibit under J.J. Redick when he was a member of the starting lineup. And that's being a guy that's a 3-and-D wing, a guy that knows how to make plays on or off the ball, and has cemented himself as a solid group guy, a role player in this league at the worst. Don Connect, we've seen him showcase his ability as a three-level scorer, most notably off the ball. I've been very impressed with the job that J.J. Redick has done. And I think J.J. Redick has actually, in some ways, exposed the lack of knowledge that some of these fans and media members have for the game. I go as far on the record to say that. And I'm proud of him for doing that. And I hope he continues to keep pushing the envelope, because all he's ever tried to do, whether he was a podcast host or even as a head coach now at the Los Angeles Lakers, is take you inside of his thought process and mind with how he evaluates the game. And when you see him connect the dots the way that he's been able to connect the dots thus far, you understand why he's able to have success. Now, of course, you're going to have his critics that say, well, he still got to win a championship, this, that, and the third. You consider what his Lakers squad was the last couple of seasons this time of year. Where they are now, big difference.
And defensively. Because, like, okay, yeah, J.J. is doing great with the offense. Yeah, okay, he was a 3-point shooter, been a part of some good offenses. The Lakers have, like, the number one defense in the last 13 games. And Anthony Davis hasn't played a nice amount of those. So we can't just attribute it strictly to A.D. And he's a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. Even without the Luka trade, they were going in a great direction. And it had a lot to do with the adjustments J.J. Redick has made throughout the course of the season.
and the read and react, you know, offense that he has implemented to go alongside of the defense, as you said, has been the number one ranked defense over the last 13 games. It's just been fun to watch. I see more ball movement. I see guys more active off ball and stuff like that. Like, it's not as stagnant as it once was with the Darvin Ham regime. As much as I know some people might want to say they feel certain coaches are getting raw deals, you got to be able to tip the cap when it's time to. And whether you were in favor of the hire or not, you can't overlook it. And I know a lot of people personally who have a lot of thoughts on this, and they real quiet right now.
And let's, you know, still shout out to Darvin Ham, because he got them to the Western Conference Finals appearance. I think he deserves another chance at a head coaching job in the league. Definitely would love to see him with a young team, because one thing he does on an individual level instill like some faith in guys that you don't typically see. Gave Cam Reddish a shot. Gave Torian Prince a shot. So I'd definitely love to see him with a young team at some point.
No, absolutely. And that opportunity coaching in LA, as we know, is no easy task, especially the Los Angeles Lakers, the most iconic franchise in the NBA, and a job that no matter what current state the Lakers are in, you're going to face a lot of scrutiny and heat, not only from the fan base consistently, but the media and the national critics alike. We've had an extensive discussion surrounding the Lakers, as well as the debut of Luka Doncic in the purple and gold at the start of the week. But let's discuss a move that we highlighted in our 2025 trade deadline special episode on Second Chance Points last week. It got nixed a few days after our recording following the conclusion of the deadline. Over this past weekend, the Lakers announced that their trade with the Charlotte Hornets for center Mark Williams was rescinded after going on to inform sources that the former Duke product failed his physical exam. The agreed-upon deal, which was supposed to send Lakers rookie wing Dalton Connect along with Cam Reddish, a 2030 pick swap, and LA's 2031 first-round pick to Charlotte, became official prior to the weekend. Yet due to the deadline passing, the deal wasn't able to be amended to account for any new medical info the Lakers may have discovered within their evaluation of Williams. During the top of the week, the Hornets were reported to be in contact with the league and exploring paths to dispute the Lakers' failed physical assessment of Mark Williams and are weighing avenues to challenge their evaluation process or find an alternative resolution with the NBA. Despite the physical being said to show multiple issues, sources around the league said that Williams did not fail the surgery due to his back, as many speculated. Connect and Williams were both held out of the Lakers and Hornets' most recent outings, despite being listed as game-time decisions at the start of this week. While Cam Reddish was said to be away from the Lakers due to the recent birth of his child, some say that the Lakers dodged the bullet torrents by finding a loophole out of the Mark Williams trade. Others say that they may have backed out due to the front office realizing that they paid a mighty high price for a talent that's missed almost 60% of possible games for Charlotte as a result of injuries throughout his first three seasons in the league. What are your overall thoughts on the deal that, as of now, remains up in the air?
So, to be clear, Charlotte themselves are accusing the Lakers of basically finding a loophole to try to get out of this trade.
That is correct, yes.
My first initial reaction when I heard about it being rescinded was the Lakers took a look at their offense, looked at the geometry on the court, and was like, yeah, we still need a knockdown shooter. And I think that that's what happened. I think they realized that, man, you know what? We didn't need to make that exact move right now. And Mark Williams, as you stated, he has an interesting medical history. We've heard about back injuries, foot, knee, amongst other things. I think the Lakers want to keep Dalton Connect. That's my personal opinion. Even when you look at the game against Utah, some of those threes that Rui was missing from the corner, those are Dalton Connect shots. And I know you got folks out here saying Dalton should be pissed because he got traded. How do you come back to the locker room? And How do you look at these guys at the front office knowing that they traded you? Hey, look, man, you a rookie. It's the intro to the NBA business. But at the same time, if nothing happens with this trade and you have to stay with the Los Angeles Lakers this year, you get a chance to shoot the most open threes you may ever have in your entire career going forward, playing with Luka and LeBron. Hey, man, just take advantage of the opportunity because the Los Angeles Lakers are definitely doing that. They're taking advantage of the loophole. That if you want my honest opinion on it.
In regards to this trade, are very similar to the thoughts that I've seen from some of the people across Lakers Twitter. Most notably, someone by the name, I believe, of Jerome Lane, if I'm correct. I'm going to pull it up because he made a very interesting point. He's part of Lakers Nation. And he was saying, like, Mark Williams and Charlotte, from Charlotte's perspective, what he was saying was, like, why would Charlotte want to send a player like Mark Williams away, knowing how young he is, if they didn't like the deal that they had? And then not only, like, didn't like the deal that they had, but, like, if this goes against them, then they really tarnishing Mark Williams' trade value, if you think about it. Because who would want to make a deal with them again if this doesn't go in their favor? With a player that the Lakers technically deem is damaged goods. Now, I want to clear this up for the public out there. Mark Williams does have issues with his foot. He does have issues of his back. However, he's never had back surgery. He's 22 years old. He's putting up 16-9. The Lakers, I think if they did back out, the reason why they backed out is because they realized they was paying a hefty amount to get a player that didn't have the best availability record, in spite of him showing an ability to produce when he has been on the floor. And 40% of Charlotte's outings through his first 3 years in the league. I look at everything now with this trade, and I'm like, I don't understand it, but Charlotte is putting their neck on the line and their reputation as a franchise on the line by fighting it.
That part, I'll have to see play out. I'm not familiar with teams going fighting against these type of claims.
Me either.
So I'm more curious to see how it plays out. I don't really have an opinion on that. But just from a basketball standpoint, I just think the Lakers, like you said, as far as trade value, yeah, we may have gave up too much. But even on the court, it's like, maybe we can ride with Jackson Hayes and Christian Wood once he, if he ever returns back. I don't know. He hasn't played all season. Maybe we can try to ride it out with those guys, or we can pick up Alex Len, somebody else in the meantime. But we need that knockdown shooter.
Breaking as of this recording, the Lakers actually waived Christian Wood, and they picked up Alex Len, who had actually intended to sign with the Indiana Pacers after entering the buyout market. However, declined at the last minute, shook the Pacers off, and went to the Lakers following the rescinding of the Mark Williams trade a few days later. So, as of this recording, Alex Len is now officially a member of the Los Angeles Lakers. Christian Wood is no longer a member of the Los Angeles Lakers, as he was waived.
And they get to keep their knockdown shooter. And we got to evaluate the Cam Reddish situation. I know he was away from the team for personal reasons prior to the trade. So hopefully those guys just come back, understand it's a business, and remain professional and just play this season out, because I think it's still going to be opportunities for both of those guys to add value to the team. We know Dalton with his three-point shooting, and we've seen Cam get used as a 3-and-D player at times.
I think the way that the Lakers looked at it is we overpaid for an asset that we don't trust his medicals. I thought overpaying in this case wasn't really a bad thing when you consider that Jackson Hayes, prior to the Alex Land signing, was the only center that they had on the roster that was healthy. LeBron is 40. You know, like, if his medicals were fine, you would rather accept that you overpaid a little bit. There are two questions that I have. Did Charlotte try to pull one over on the Lakers? And did the Lakers try and back out of a done deal? I think both sides have a lot at stake reputation-wise, and I think the majority of the league will watch. I think fans will continue to watch the action that goes on, and they should. But if you're someone that follows the league and league business, I think that this is a very interesting story to follow, because I haven't seen a trade prior to this one get rejected since 2009, when Tyson Chandler was involved in a deal that was supposed to send him to Oklahoma City. I don't know if most fans have listened to the Out the Mud podcast with Tony Allen and Zach Randolph, but Kevin Durant recently spoke about that, said he believes if that trade had ever went through, Oklahoma City definitely wins a championship. So for those that believe that this trade being rescinded will impact Mark Williams' career in a negative way, I don't believe it will, as long as he continues to be healthy or is able to operate under the maintenance program that Charlotte has the rest of the way and still put together quality numbers. They can still trade him this offseason with no problem. He's still a big man that has tremendous promise and a high upside. And I hope that fans that weren't necessarily familiar with his game prior to the trade watch his game a little bit more for a Charlotte roster that, while they're the second worst team record-wise in the East, still has some tremendous young talent that you should check out once in a while. But moving along from the Lakers and Hornets trade debacle to talk about a new format that fans will witness during the 74th NBA All-Star game in San Francisco as a way to increase competition and excitement around the showcase. In an attempt to promote a faster-paced style of play and make the stakes worth the players' while, the new format will divide the 24 NBA All-Star selections into three teams of eight players each, as the rosters for the teams in this year's contest were picked by NBA on TNT analyst Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal, and Kenny Smith this past week, while the fourth team will feature the winning team in the Rising Stars competition, consisting of the NBA's top first and second-year talents, managed by WNBA legend and TNT analyst Candace Parker. The game will unfold in a three-game tournament-style format. There will be two semifinal matchups, followed by the finals, where the winners from the semifinal round will face off for the championship. Each game will be played up to 40 points with no shot clock, as only the shot clock will be utilized in the new pickup style format. This was something that the league had announced a few months ago, Torrance, as I know we talked about it briefly at the time, privately amongst ourselves. But with the event set to get underway this upcoming weekend, I'd like to know, what are your overall thoughts on the new format? And what do you expect to see from it, or what would you like to see from this year's events in the Bay Area as a fan yourself?
So basically, there is no play clock. They're only going to use the shot clock to keep the game, like the pace going.
Correct.
So you're playing up to 40, but it's only a 24, like just so it's still possession.
Yep.
I mean,
pickup style at the park.
It's cool in theory. But I'm just curious as to how the politics going to work with the team selections, because I got one theory already. I think we're going to see a few more guys sit out this game, and they're going to have to do it ahead of time. So we will see some more injury subs as far as the All-Star game goes. And I'm just curious, you got like Bron, Steph, and KD. The way Charles, Shaq, and Kenny talk, they're going to do their best in theory to – put all three of them on separate teams.
Well, the teams have already been selected, as they selected the teams last week. I can read them off to you. So Team Shaq will be led by LeBron James, Stephen Curry. Anthony Davis will be replaced by Kyrie Irving on that team, representing the Dallas Mavericks. Jason Tatum, Kevin Durant, Damian Lillard, James Harden, and Jaylen Brown. Team Kenny will be Anthony Edwards, Jalen Brunson, Jaren Jackson Jr., Jalen Williams, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Kay Cunningham, and Tyler Hero. Team Chuck will be Nikola Jokic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Victor Wembanyama in his first appearance with the San Antonio Spurs, Pascal Siakam, Alperen Sengun, Karl Anthony Towns, Donovan Mitchell, and Trae Young, who will be replacing Giannis Antetokounmpo, as we announced earlier in the show.
Yeah, it was a way better way they could do that. But I knew that they, like, LeBron and Steph was going to end up on the same team. I just think they should have just put all three of them guys on their own teams. That was the obvious thing to do, because the first game against the Rising Stars would have been crazy competitive, just because, I mean, if you LeBron or KD or Steph, you're not trying to lose to no rookies or no sophomores. So that first game, you're going to get a good first game out of them off rip just because of that. Now that finals, yeah, you know, guys might, we'll see. Because now maybe the money on the line, you know, maybe they got incentive. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just going to be open-minded to the idea. It's really just going to come down to guys' energy levels, because guys might just shoot a bunch of threes to get to that 40 points. I don't know if that's going to just necessarily help the cause this format.
Yeah, so like with the prize money, the four teams participating in the NBA All-Star game, they're going to compete for a prize pool of $1.8 million. Each player on the championship winning team is going to receive $125K. Each player on the second place team receives $50K. And each player on the third and fourth place team receives $25K. I would have liked to have seen them allow the top four vote getters, regardless of conference, or the top three vote getters, excuse me, pick the teams out. That's what I would have preferred, as opposed to letting Jack, Chuck, and Kenny pick. And I would have preferred that they had just did the All-Star draft about a couple hours before the game and just aired it live. That's the way that they should have done. I always believed that this format was coming, because ever since the 2023 All-Star game that we saw in Utah, it was obvious that in order to increase fan interest and engagement, that they were going to have to make some tweaks and changes. And the only way that I felt like that they could do it is by making it similar to a pickup game at the park. I don't really have any initial thoughts to the new format, but I'm very curious to see how it works. And I do agree that with you, Torrance, when you say that whoever faces off against the winners of the Rising Stars competition, yeah, they definitely gonna play with some ammo, because they don't want to go home to rookies and sophomores. Yeah, for sure. I'm looking forward to watching it. You know, it has a different twist. I don't have any high level expectations. I just want to see guys, you know, compete and make the game fun for the fans.
And that's it. Like, all of these format changes, you know, the Kobe year, that was cool. Honor Bean, that was cool. I can appreciate and respect that change. But all of these format changes, bro, people keep asking for simple stuff. Give us East versus West. Get rid of the All-Star game jerseys. Let people wear their home and away, depending on which conference the game is being played in. Put some All-Stars in the event. And that's it. If the guys play hard, they play hard. If they don't, they don't. But I don't think, I mean, these formats, they one-trick ponies. You know what I'm saying? Like, it might be cool this year, but then next year, they're going to be going right back to finessing it. Like, bro, I don't feel like hooping today. I'm ready to go on my vacation tomorrow. And I don't think $125,000 going to do that for no all-star. So that's the other thing. These are all-stars. These ain't just second-year players. Like, these guys, a lot of these guys got max contracts. Now, money is money. People can go buy a car with their all-star money. They can do a lot. But I don't know if that's just enough to incentivize guys to go all out in the manner that you, I guess, you hope they would in a 40-point game.
Yeah, the way I see it, I don't think we'll ever go back to players wearing their original team jerseys, unfortunately. It's just too much of a money grab.
That's you just, can put the patch on it. You can put the patch on the.
I know
on
you
jersey.
Can. I remember how they used to do it back in the day. You know,
you put the All Star patch on the jersey.
I remember watching the 2001 All Star game in DC. They had the All Star patch with the year and stuff, and that was cool to see. But I just don't see them going back to that personally because it's a money grab. They know that these kids, from the moment that their favorite player has been named an All Star, they want that All Star jersey. They put them right out there for you, team shop. Going to games and online stores and all that, and fans flock to them. The way I see it, it would be nice to have an old-style All-Star game. And, yeah, the All-Star game, when it was here in Chicago in 2020, I had a chance to watch the Rising Stars competition with Ja Morant, Trae Young, and Zion taking part of that alongside of Luka Doncic. It was a very fun event. I think it was the last great All-Star game just simply because of what had transpired a couple weeks prior to it taking place. And I felt like a lot of guys knew how much Kobe Bryant valued that All-Star game and the fact that it was an All-Star game where the MVP award had just been named in his honor. It gave guys something to strive for. They knew that that was a game that Kobe wouldn't have wanted to be played with half-assed intensity. Basically, you know, that wasn't a game that he would have won it. So that was really the last great All-Star weekend. I don't know if it's a way that you can reduplicate that. If this is a format that helps in some capacity, I'd be intrigued to see it. It's an event that I'm going to watch no matter what because I've watched it religiously all my life since I was 8 years old. Even if some fans are frustrated with the event or may chastise fans like myself for doing so.
All of these guys say they got Mamba mentality. All of these guys got on Kobe's. Even if they not signed with Nike, they Answers, they Adidas, they 361s, whatever brands you want to put out there, they all got a Kobe-looking shoe. You hear NFL players say they got Mamba mentality. Why the fuck we got to do all of this incentivizing for these guys to display this quote-unquote Mamba mentality they think they got? And we all know that Kobe took the All-Star game serious, too. It wasn't no let-up with that shit. See, that's what I'm saying, man. Everything just phrases to people, man.
I get what you're saying. I understand. But I think we just in a different age and time in society. I'm not trying to justify the way that these athletes approach it, but we're just in a different time. And, you know, when you have a lot of fans that are quick to glorify ring culture, say that certain things don't matter anymore. You know, we've become such a careless society, in my opinion. I don't even know sometimes what the fuck we passionate about. So when you talk about the Mamba mentality and the importance of it, I don't think it always registers fully with some of the guys that are currently in the NBA today. But I hope, like I said, that this is an event that fans don't have to bitch about for once in the last 5 years, because the 2020 All-Star game, when it was here, I think that was the last time we had a great slam dunk contest. I think that was the last time we had a great All-Star game. That just was a perfect weekend. Very rarely does that happen, but hopefully the Bay Area can help to recapture some of that glory, a place that 25 years ago gave us one of the greatest slam dunk competitions with Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady, and Steve Francis and the like, and in a fantastic All-Star game that culminated in Shaquille O'Neal and Tim Duncan sharing MVP honors. NBA All-Star Weekend is officially upon us. However, there are still a few games on the national schedule that may pique your interest, beginning with the Swipe and De'Aaron Fox pulling up in the Beantown with his new running mate and the alien known as Victor Wembanyama. He got the San Antonio Spurs into action against fellow All-Star peers Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and the defending champion Boston Celtics. You can catch that contest as part of the NBA on ESPN Wednesday night doubleheader, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, followed by Dubs Mavs out in Dallas, followed by a Western Conference tilt on TNT the following night as Chet Holmgren makes his return to his hometown beside his All-Star teammate and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to lead the Thunder into Minneapolis to take on Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves out at the Target Center. That contest is set to go down at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central Time. As far as the NBA All-Star schedule goes, You can catch all of the action going down this weekend on TNT. You'll have the Rising Stars game going down at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central Time on Valentine's Day night. All-Star Saturday night consisting of the Skills Challenge, three-point contest, and slam dunk contest taking place at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, followed by the All-Star game itself on Sunday night that will also start at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. I know I usually take this time to ask you which games fans should have their eyes on during a given week. And if you have any, feel free to share with the audience, as I won't stop you on that one, Torrance. However, I'd like to know, with NBA All-Star officially around the corner, which given event are you looking forward to seeing the most?
Out of all of the events, I'm only looking forward to one event truly and one individual, and that's Matas Buzelis in the dunk contest, because he repping for the Bulls. I know I contradicted myself from earlier. So what? She read all day. That's pretty much the only event. I mean, the three-point contest is never, like, it can never truly be bad. It just can't. So that's cool. And like I said, other than that, man, I'm not really hyped for this All-Star weekend. I'll be honest. I will do my best to be open-minded about it. Maybe this can be one of those years where things align.
For me, the All-Star event that I'm looking forward to seeing the most is the one that's always been my favorite since I was a child, and that's the three-point contest. I'm real excited to see Norman Powell get, you know, some shine with the L.A. Clippers. You know, I don't expect him to win it, but it's just nice to see him get some appreciation for the year.
You're going to make sure Norm gets something this year, ain't you?
No, it just would be nice. You know, like, I thought he's had a great season, man. You know, he's put in the work and 10,000 hours to get his just due. When you consider the season that he's having, I know a lot of people thought that he was deserving of an All-Star nod, including Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal. They said it on the NBA on TNT panel once the reserves were announced and they saw that he was omitted from the list. I'm just curious to see how he's going to hold up against the likes of Damian Lillard, who's a two-time defending champion at this event. Interested to see whether or not he can make it his third time alongside of a talented field with a one-time three-point champion himself and Buddy Hield, who won the 2020 competition when it was in Chicago alongside of Tyler Hero, Darius Garland, and Cade Cunningham and Jalen Brunson. I think it's an interesting field, and I'm curious to see if somebody has what it takes to pull off the upset against the two-time defending champion, who has really turned that into an event of his own as of recent times. As we know, is the reigning All-Star Game MVP. And with it being in his backyard, I don't think he would want to lose this
one. That's a good point, man. So he just gave y'all something to look forward to on y'all parlays.
That concludes this week's episode of the New 24 Podcast. Thank you all so much for taking time out of your day to listen in to us yet once again to discuss all of the latest and greatest pertaining to all the most recent happenings around the NBA. We truly appreciate all of you. If you've enjoyed what you've heard thus far through the first 14 episodes of the New 24 Podcast, for this episode alone, please feel free to leave us a 5-star rating with additional thoughts or comments on what you like about it on the podcast platforms you consume to listen to us. In addition to also subscribing to our RSS feed to make sure you don't miss a single episode as soon as it drops, you can do so over on rss.com/podcast/TNTF. You can also follow us on Twitter as, or X as some call it, at what Gave said, GAVE, and Torrance at TStacks_STACKS. If you want to chop it up on a game of basketball and more during the times we're away from the microphone, recording episodes week after week. For myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrance Stagger, stay safe and have a productive rest of your week. Peace.